This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. On this Thanksgiving Day, we're giving thanks for great American music. We've gone into the archive for this 1998 interview with Ray Charles. He was nicknamed the genius not just for his great singing and piano playing, but also for his producing, arranging, and choice of songs. Although he's considered to have virtually invented soul, many of his great recordings were country songs. When I spoke with him, Rhino Records had just released a box set collecting Ray Charles' complete country and western recordings from 1959 to 86. So we started with a 1962 recording that was included in the box. This is Born to Lose.
Born to lose, I've lived my life in vain. Every dream has only brought me pain. All my life I've always been so blue. Born to lose, and now I'm losing you. Born to lose.
Ray Charles, why did you first want to record country music?
Truthfully, because I love it. I've always loved it as a kid. That was the only time my mom would let me stay up past 9 o'clock on Saturday night to listen to the Grand Ole Opry. And of course, the lyrics that they were saying, you know, were very everyday type conversation, if you know what I mean. You didn't have to be an Einstein to figure out what they were talking about. So it was very common, very much like the blues in a sense.
Well, I want to play Your Cheatin' Heart, which is a real standard of country music. This is just a really wonderful example of you doing a song your way. I mean, you might even be using different chords on here than the chords that were written. But
That's right. That's right. Well, that's what makes it become me.
Uh-huh. And the singing, too, of course.
Well, thank you, ma'am.
But would you say a little bit about what you did with this song to make it your own?
Well, it's like any song that I'm going to do. I first sing it to myself and see if I can genuinely feel it, you know. Maybe sometimes I may sit at the keyboard and fool around with the chords and see if I can find a way to sing it where it makes me feel good inside. Sometimes, you know, I can run into songs that are good songs, but I can't make it do anything for me. But the song is a great song, you know. To give you for an example, like, I've always loved Stardust, a beautiful song. But I never could quite get it to sound like I wanted it to, for me.
Okay, now Stardust, you had a huge hit with Hoagy Carmichael's Georgia.
That's right.
How come Stardust doesn't work for you?
Well, I just could never get into it. Georgia was something, I used to harm Georgia. As a matter of fact, my chauffeur said to me one day, he said, "You know, Mr. Charles, you're always humming that song, Georgia. You're always humming it all the time. Why don't you record it?" Well, I had never thought about recording. I just liked the song, you know. But it was a chord structure in Georgia. I mean, especially in the middle part of it, it's got some beautiful changes to it. Hoagy Carmichael, I have to give him some skin. He wrote some beautiful stuff on that song.
Okay, well, I had you describe your version of Your Cheatin' Heart, and we haven't played that yet, so let me give that a spin now. This is the Hank Williams song, Your Cheatin' Heart, performed by Ray Charles. Here it is.
Your cheatin' heart will make you weep. You'll cry and cry and try to sleep, but sleep won't come the whole through. Your cheating heart will tell on you.
That's Ray Charles. One of his recordings included on his new box set, The Complete Country and Western Recordings, 1959 to 1986. Now, it's funny, you know, when I was young, some of your country songs were really big hits, you know, like Born to Lose and You Don't Know Me and Crying Time. I didn't think of them as country songs. I thought of them as Ray Charles records.
You're very sweet, honey. Thank you, Terry.
I mean that. I didn't find out till much later they were country songs.
Well, actually, what it is, I'll tell you something that I mean, and which I think it would be helpful to the people, to our listeners, just so they will really know what I'm about. You see, I am not a country singer. I'm not a jazz singer. I am not a blues singer. What I am is I am a singer that can sing country music. I can sing the blues. I can sing a love song, but I'm not a specialist. Like you would say, B.B. King is a blues singer.
Right.
There's no question about it. But I'm not a blues singer. I'm a singer that can sing the blues.
I know a lot of African-American musicians grew up listening to country music on the radio in the South, because that's what was on the radio.
Yeah.
Then. I'm wondering if you ever felt any more distanced from that music because the performers were white and you were African-American. Did that matter to you at all?
No. You know, that is the marvelous thing about music. It is the one thing that I won't say there was no segregation or anything. I'm not saying that, but it was very, very small. I mean, if you look around, you saw guys like Benny Goodman. I mean, there was Lyle Hampton in his band. You know, various white bands. There were black people in the bands, and there was. When I was coming up, I even worked with a hillbilly group in Florida called the Hillbilly Playboys. The Florida Playboys, and it was a hillbilly group. They taught me how to yodel.
Yeah, no, could you yodel for us?
Yodel-ee. I mean, I'm a lot better than that, but that's the idea. Yodel-ee. My voice is too early in the morning, but you get the idea.
You know, I have to say that is not unlike some of the things that you do on your soul records. No, really.
Okay. I truly enjoy the various forms of music, and it really keeps me going.
Did you think I was nuts when I said that about yodeling sounding not unlike some of the things you do on your solo records?
Yeah. No. I heard every word of it, girl. I really did.
I want to play another personal favorite from your country recordings, and this is You Don't Know Me.
All right.
Would you tell us about why you chose this song?
Oh, I think, again, the songs that I choose, I start with the lyrics. What are the lyrics saying to me? What kind of story are they telling me? I guess it's like an actor who looks at a script, you know, because, you know, when you look at lyrics, you got to tell a story in 3 minutes. You know, you don't have 2 hours like you do when you got a script. You got to say what you got to say and make it believable within 3 minutes. So I start with the lyrics. And when I start with the lyrics, I tell myself, now, how many people will this song fit? I mean, does it sound like most people can relate to it? And you tell yourself, yeah, you give your hand to me, and then you say, I watch you walk away, you know. Or you, when you hear somebody says, I can't stop loving you, I've made up my mind. Just think of the people say that. And so I always start with the lyrics to see, does the lyrics carry any real meaning, not just for me, but for the people who are going to be listening to me?
Well, let's hear You Don't Know Me. And the song was written by Cindy Walker and Eddie Arnold. And this is Ray Charles' 1962 recording of it, now reissued on his CD box set, The Complete Country and Western Recordings, 1959 to 1986.
You give your hand to me, and then you say hello. And I can hardly speak. My heart is beating so, and anyone can tell. You think you know me well, but you don't know me.
No, you don't know me.
No, you don't know the one who dreams of you at night.
and longs to kiss your lips and longs to hold you tight. Oh, I'm just a friend, that's all I've ever been, 'cause you don't know me.
No, you don't know me.
For I never knew the art of making love, though my heart aches with love for you. Afraid and shy, I let my chance go by, a chance that you might love me too.
Love me too.
You give your hand to me.
As we mentioned, you grew up in the country, and I think it was at about the age of 7 that you lost your sight, and you lost it gradually over a period of a couple of years. Did you realize what was happening?
Well, as far as losing my sight, I knew that because my mom was very astute. I mean, I don't know how she managed to come up with the idea she did, you know, but see, because she didn't have no psychologist to tell her to do this or tell her to do that. But she knew I was going to lose my eyesight. And so since she knew I was going to lose my sight, she started showing me how to get around and how to do things without seeing. Like, she would tell me, okay, I'm going to show you where this chair is. Okay, now since you can't see that chair, you're going to have to teach yourself to remember that that chair is there. Or you got to teach yourself to remember that that table is there. Or you got to teach yourself to remember to turn right when you get to da 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 da. And of course, she started with me with me when I started to lose my eyesight. So I gained an awful lot. And of course, being that age, it wasn't as much of a shock as, say, it would be if I was, say, losing my sight at the age of 30 or 40 or something, where you've seen all your life.
Did you go through a long period of depression afterwards?
No, because when I, by the time I started losing my sight for sure, I was going to a school for the deaf and the blind.
Did you have good medical care at the time?
Oh no, honey, you know you're thinking about much later in life. I mean, I bless your heart. I appreciate the question, but no, medically. I mean, I don't think anybody in those days even knew what that was. As a matter of fact, we had one hospital on the campus, and you won't believe this, but this is the facts. It was one hospital there, and it was on what they called the white side. We had to go over to the white side if we needed to go to the hospital. I mean, that was just the way it was. Nobody thought nothing about it because, hey, if that's the way it is, that's the way it is.
Well, it's kind of amazing, isn't it, that here you are going to school for people who are blind, and it's a segregated school.
That's
so
right.
You're segregated by color, which you can't even see.
That's right. That's right. But you know, I'm sure you probably will never understand it, because I never understood, and I've lived a lot longer than you, and I can tell you, I've never understood how somebody can be against me and yet let me cook their food for them, feed them. You know, don't make sense, does it?
Was it at the boarding school for children who were blind and deaf that you first learned to play music?
Exactly. Yeah, I couldn't get into piano class, so I started taking up clarinet. That's why I can play clarinet and saxophone.
Wait, so you played clarinet first?
Oh, yeah.
How'd you like the instrument?
I loved it. Well, I was a great fan of Artie Shaw. I used to love him. Everybody was talking about Benny Goodman, but I was an Artie Shaw man. I mean, 100%. I was very impressed by what he could do with a clarinet, and naturally, he was my mentor. I wanted to play. But I wanted to be in the piano class, but since I couldn't, I figured, well, okay, I'll play clarinet. And I did that. And of course, but the next year, I was able to get into the piano class.
Did you give up clarinet?
No, I studied both. But naturally, my heart was with the keyboard, because, I mean, that's just, because there's so much you can do when you play piano. I by the time I was 12 years old, 13 years old, I could write a whole arrangement for a 17-piece band. See, that's the great thing. If you study piano, it gives you a whole outlook on a lot of different things that has to do with music.
Now, what kind of music were you playing in school?
Oh, well, they had like little small, cute little songs from Chopin that we would play, or Beethoven or something like that. The little, not the symphonies, but the little small vignettes or whatever you call those mm-hmm. little things that you do, you know. And of course, when I would write something, of course, I would write some kind of current song, you know, that was being played, you know, on the radio. I was just writing an arrangement for the band to play it. And I tell you, that's why I don't write a score today, because I started out writing the parts first. You know, most times what arrangers do, I'm sure you know this, I'm just saying for the sake of the audience, arrangers write a score first. And then when they write the score, they write the parts. Well, I wanted to hear the music so bad, I'd write the parts first and write the score afterwards. It's kind of backward, right?
Well, you know, I interviewed Hank Crawford, who played in your band in
the late 50s. Yes, he was my accomplice for a lot of years.
Yeah, and he was your music director for a while. And,
that's right.
And he said that when you did an arrangement, what you would do would be to call out the notes.
That's right. He told you, right? That's right.
Yeah, and I thought that was so strange. I figured, oh, you'd sing the part for the person who was transcribing it.
No. I would literally tell him what note to write down. If I tell him the notes, I don't have to worry about whether I'm singing in or out of tune, do I?
Well, that's a good point, right.
All right? If I tell him the notes, it can't be no mistake.
Uh-huh.
You see what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't want to hum it. I want to, because I know how to tell him technically. All he got to do is write what I tell him. That way it can't be no mistake, because if I hum it to him, I might not hum it just right, or he may not hear it right, or hear what I'm saying. But if I say it's C-sharp, C-sharp is C-sharp all over the world.
Now, what were the early kinds of places you performed in?
Oh, they were like places one way in and one way out. you know what I mean? They were places like it was like dance halls, and they would a lot of them would sell beer, and they'd sell fish and chicken and stuff like that. But like I said, it was one way in, one way out. So if a fight broke out, you know, it was kind of rough. Those were the days, I have to say, that they were good experiences, but I would not like to do them again, you know, because, like I said, we were playing dances in those days, and, of course, anything could happen.
Now, early in your career, you went through a period, like many people do early on, of trying to figure out who you were musically, and before you really figured that out, you sounded very much like you had patterned yourself on Nat Cole and Charles Brown.
That's right.
What did they both mean to you? Why did you feel so strongly about them?
Well, Nat Cole, the reason he was so powerful in my life was the fact that I wanted to do exactly what he was doing. You know, most people think of Nat Cole as a great singer. You know, they know his voice. But I was looking at Nat Cole as a pianist. I mean, he was one of the people don't realize, but Nat Cole was a hell of a pianist. He played some of that tasty stuff behind his singing, and that's what I wanted to do, was to be able to play little tasty things behind what I was singing. So I really tried to pattern myself after Nat Cole in the early beginnings of my career.
Well, I thought we could listen to the very first recording that you made, which is Confession Blues.
Oh, my goodness. Where did you find that?
On one of your box sets. it was easy.
Oh, brother. Yeah, that's one of the things where I was, you got me down pat. I was about 17 years old at that time when I made that.
This is 1949. Let's hear it, and then we'll talk about it.
I want to tell you a story. Of a boy who was once in love. I want to tell you a story. Of a boy who was once in love. And how the girl that I loved robbed me of the happiness I dreamed of. She called me fine, sweet, and mellow, but that didn't mean a thing.
That was Ray Charles' first recording, made in 1949. How did you start to get a sense of who you were as a singer? and start to establish your own sound?
Oh, well, around about 19... Well, I started thinking about it in the 1951, somewhere in there, in 1950 or 51. But I was scared to try it because, you know, I could get a lot of work sounding like Nat Cole. You know, I could work in nightclubs and I could make a living, you know, with his sound. I woke up one morning and I started to thinking that I said to myself, you know, nobody knows my name. Everybody said to me, hey, kid, you sound just like Nat Cole. Hey, kid. Nobody never said Ray. Never, never, never. So I started telling myself, you know, your mom always told you to be yourself. And you got to be yourself if you're going to make it in this business. You got to, I know you love Nat Cole, but you got to stop that.
Well, your sound, you know, draws on rhythm and blues and also, I think, gospel music. Did you sing in a church when you were young?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, like I said to you earlier, I went to all the BYPU meetings and the Sunday school and the Sunday morning service and the evening service and the revival meetings they would have during the week, you know, whenever that was going on. So I didn't star in the church, but I did sing and you know a little bit in the choir.
Is there a record that you think of as being the first recording that you made as yourself, really establishing yourself?
Probably I Got a Woman.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was it. Because that when I did that, that seemed to upset a lot of people. But it was really me.
It upset a lot of people?
Oh, yeah. A lot of people thought that it was too religious and I was bastardizing the church. And, oh, man, I got all kinds of criticism.
Oh, you mean you were using too much of a sanctified sound for a sexual record?
Yeah, that's right. But it was really me. It was 100% me. And, of course, I just said, well, I have to be criticized because I'm going to sing the way I sing. And later on, after some other people start doing it, then they start calling it soul music. It just goes to show you, I guess I was a little ahead of my time or something.
Well, Ray Charles, it has been so wonderful to talk with you. I really thank you so much for your time.
Well, Terry, it's been good talking to you, and I just want you to know not only is it good to talk to you, but I'm going to keep on listening to you, too.
It is an honor to hear you say that. Thank you.
I really mean it. Thank you very much.
My interview with Ray Charles was recorded in 1998.
Well, I got a woman way over town that's good to me. Oh yeah, say I got a woman way over town, good to me. Oh yeah, she give me money when I'm in need. Yeah, she's a kind of friend indeed. I got a woman town that's good to me. Oh yeah.
If you'd like to catch up on Fresh Air interviews you missed, like this week's interviews with Trevor Noah and Zadie Smith, and our tribute to the late Sharon Jones, check out our podcast. You'll find those and other Fresh Air interviews. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our technical director and engineer is Audrey Bentham. Our associate producer for online media is Molly C.V. Nesper. Roberta Shorrock directs the show. I'm Terry Gross. All of us at Fresh Air wish you a happy Thanksgiving.
And you know, when I was in school, we used to sing something like this. Listen here.
Oh, beautiful, far spacious skies, far amber waves of grain. A purple mountain majesties over the fruited plain.
But now wait a minute, I'm talking about America, sweet America. You know, God done shed his grace on thee. He crowned thy good. Yes, he did. Heavy brotherhood from sea to sea.
Bye.